Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
Well, well, well. Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Well, it was a busy week for you, I know. You had your
I had my breakthrough blueprint. Orlando. That's right.
And
the first in-person event in 6 months. So yes, it was good. It was nice to
you have to report back from the front lines.
Well, it was interesting because we had about four fewer people than were booked with new Omicron, some alarm bells into the world. And a couple of people were concerned about coming down and getting stuck if there were then international travel bans put on getting back into Canada. So chose to stay. But then we had three other Canadians that were there and got back safely with no problems.
Well, there's actually probably more Canadians in Florida than there is in Canada.
I bet that's true. And why wouldn't there be, right? I mean, it's just recently.
Well, you just recently
got the ability to get out, right? Isn't that something?
Yeah, well, Florida on the East Coast. And then you have Arizona. You have Palm Springs. You have Maui.
Yeah.
You know, so Canadians are well represented in all these warm spots.
Do you know what I always laughed at? Gary Halbert once said that, you know, God gave us a sign that when places were suitable to live in, he would put palm trees to make it safe, to let you know that it's safe to live here. So if you look around and you don't see palm trees, keep going south. You're not there yet.
Yeah.
I thought that's pretty funny.
Well, you have, not too far from you, you have Smyrna Beach, and I was doing a bit of, you know, internet jumping this week, and it's rated as one of the 20 most dangerous places in the world to swim.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. They have more sharks.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. No.
Sharks travel long distances to have human burgers in Smyrna Beach.
It's Michelin rated among the sharks.
Michelin rated, yeah.
Among the sharks, man. Come over here.
But I think it's usually a disappointing experience because humans are mostly gristle.
That's very marbly. Sometimes you get the...
You're sorry. After the first bite, you're sorry. You know, I mean,
what are those,
now seals, now on Cape Cod, now there's an infestation of white sharks, you know, the serious sharks. White sharks are serious sharks.
Yeah.
And it's because they have a major sanctuary for seals right at the, Cape Cod is shaped like an arm. You know, an arm and the elbow part of it. There's a whole sanctuary down there. If you look at the map, and they go up and down the coast, seals do, and usually in groups anywhere from 7 or 8 to 20. And, you know, there isn't a McDonald's that has a better location for sharks than that one.
That's funny.
Yeah,
that is funny. But we had a good time. It was good to be among people. It was we had 8 instead of 12, but it was it's a full immersion experience, which was that's the interesting thing that you get in the in-person is all the in-between stuff. Lunches together.
Side conversations. Yeah. I mean, I was back in for 2 days this week because we're just getting people back in. We're starting the workshops in Toronto and Chicago in January, according to the regular schedule. And then we're going to have makeup Zoom calls for those who don't make the trip. You know, so for 10 times, we'll have a makeup near the end of January. We'll have a makeup workshop on Zoom, and we'll do the same thing for Free Zone for those who can't make it. Yeah. But anyway, it's, you know, I grew up Catholic and I was used to Lent. This is like a Lent that never ends.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's, we'll see, it's, Dan. I mean,
but this latest, I think this latest one is, you know, the Omicron, whatever that means. The Omicron
ominous.
Variant. Yeah, Omicron variant has no deaths attached to it. Yes, in the U.S. and I think it's the variant that completely breaks the government's credibility if they go heavy on their mandates, the mask mandates with this one, because nobody's paying any attention to it whatsoever. You know, and yeah. And it gets to the point where they aren't enforcing. They aren't really enforcing it. So a law that is issued but isn't enforced diminishes government credibility. Plus, none of the government leaders are demonstrating in any way that they're using the mask themselves for their private parties and private functions. You know, last week, governors and presidents and, you know, and legislature leaders all over the country are shown being mask-free in close-distance social events. So it's kind of entered into the ridiculous period. Yeah. Anyway,
I'm really torn about the, you know, going on a blackout of all of this stuff in my life here, because, you know, we've talked about, I live in Florida and we have a lot of hurricanes, and in hurricane season, the thing that we have now, of course, is the, you know, weather forecasting and the hurricane tracking and the projection of the cone of where the possible landings of hurricanes are. And for a week or 10 days before a hurricane is coming, they're tracking it with this cone that gets, you know, the possibilities of where it's going to land are wider. So everything in Florida, you see many of these come, and you get the whole state of Florida up on high alert because the whole cone covers the state of Florida. And then through the Caribbean, of course, they paint the image of the hurricane as this red buzzsaw-shaped thing making its way, inching its way up. And the imagery of it and the projection of the timeline of everything gets people all in a panic. And, of course, the stores get emptied out and, you know, everything is, people are concerned about it. But the reality of it is that it's absolutely, you know, beautiful weather up until when the hurricane actually comes. Even when it comes right through, it's you know, 8 to 12 hours of blowing and big rain. And then you would never know the next morning that the hurricane had even come in terms of the looking up at the sky. But people lose so much mental focus and energy with this, the, you know, full of cortisol from the, and adrenaline from the negative anticipation of this. And I was thinking about how Omicron and all of these things, all this news, it's just gets people on high alert, edge. If you really look at your own world. Edge.
Yeah. Well, the thing about that, I mean, on the good side of that observation is the fact that deaths due to weather or environment, depending on which word you want to use, are down 98% since 100 years ago. Okay, mm-hmm. So if you go back to the 1920s, people used to get killed by hurricanes, you know, and because they didn't have the tracking, they didn't have the warnings, and people didn't make preparation. So my sense is that, you know, the scares related to environment don't have any, you know, that the environment's getting worse because of the reasons that the, you know, the environmental activists say is causing. But actually, the one statistic that is really an accurate statistic in all countries, for the most part, are deaths caused by violent storms, floods, tsunamis. You have it, tornadoes. I mean, this week there's been over 100 deaths with tornadoes north of you in Kentucky and mid-stretch and that. But yeah. Tornadoes are a lot trickier than hurricanes.
Yeah, you can't see them coming.
Well, they can pop up in 2 or 3 hours, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it might be just windy and it's a violent storm, but when the funnels come down, then it's turned into the real thing. And that's far less predictable, far less predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I mean, 8 billion people today because things that used to kill humans, you know, animal, vegetable, and, you know, weather conditions, we've gotten much more alert, much more forewarned about these things than as possible. But the mental state that it puts people into, that's another story.
Yeah. That's what I wonder. Like, so I've been trying to weigh out the a news diet or media blackouts on those kind of things, just to see the difference. For me, I've been making great strides in, you know, dopamine reduction. I just saw the other day I'm 20% down over last week on my, you know, phone screen time on my phone.
Oh, good.
Due to, yeah, I go to a cafe in the morning here, and I've been leaving my phone in the car and just noticing what a different level experience. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 2 hours of no dopamine, no connection is a much richer experience than 2 hours with the phone right there, able to check things or to, you know, mm-hmm. beeping with announcements and you know, those kind of things. And so,
yeah,
because I've been thinking about your, you know, you said something a while ago, there's nothing out going on out there that's any more important or valuable than what's going on in your own mind right now. There's, your thoughts are far more fertile, you know, territory than any entertainment thing or anything that's going on.
They're more accessible and actionable.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
The mm-hmm. things that I'm actually talking about. Yeah, I have a file where I do quarterly books, and
yeah,
so I'll just think of an idea, and I said that might be an interesting book, and I've got 30 or 40 titles stockpiled. And before I go into every quarter, you know, I usually have something that's top of mind, but I'll go back and check the list if something I already wrote maybe 6 months ago is a better thing. But I just wrote down a title called Didn't Matter, Won't Matter. In other words, and I said that I just go back and I check out in my life things that I really got worked up about or I was worried about, but then when I actually had the experience, it didn't really matter that I should have gotten worked up about it, that I shouldn't have got bothered about it. And I said, what kind of things in my history didn't matter? You know, but I was, at the time, I was quite exercised by them. I was, you know, I was kind of worried. I was anxious, whatever the term you want to apply to it. And they didn't matter. And I said, so if I take that past experience and apply it to the present and, you know, the foreseeable future, what won't matter? Okay. And there's a very narrow band, I noticed, of things that really do matter. And they all have to do things I'm doing and people I know. In other words, people I don't know, it doesn't really, it's never really turned out that it bothered me that much afterwards.
Right.
Okay. That's so right now, seeing people that I don't know in the future, they won't really matter to me. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And people said, well, you don't care about what's happening to people on the other side of the world. And I said, yeah, I would say that's true. I don't really care. And what I mean by that is I don't care about people that I have absolutely no connection to, and there's nothing I can do to actually affect their lives one way or another. So I don't really care. And they said, but no, I mean, you really care. I said, no, I don't care. I care about people I know. I've taken all the caring in my tank. And I've disconnected it from people I don't know and focused it 100% on the people I do know.
Yes.
And people said, well, I've never heard anyone who just doesn't care about that. And I said, well, there's a difference between caring and wanting other people to believe that you do care.
Signaling that you care. Right. Exactly.
Signaling. I see no, I have not gotten any reward and I don't see any future reward for signaling that I care about something I actually don't care about.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing. And yet, you know, the world goes on.
Yeah. So it is interesting. So this is where I get torn by these is the, you know, the what comes with the overall awareness of what's going on is the, you know, your eyes only see and your ears only hear what you're looking for. Then I get to pop out and see things that fit the VCR formula. And I see the patterns that lead to the thought that even identifies the VCR formula.
Yeah.
By being, I pay a lot of attention to pop culture, to what's going on in the zeitgeist kind of thing. Sorry, Dan, you go ahead.
I was just talking. We started this quarter's workshops, not this past week, but the end of the week before. So Thursday, Friday, and I did three last week. So I've had five workshops, 4-10 times in one free zone. And so we were chatting, you know, and I think it was a lunchtime break. I was in one of the breakout rooms for lunch. And a person said, you know, so what's the, you know, the kind of biggest learning that you've gotten out of the COVID period, you know, just since it started? And I said, I think the biggest thing is not to react too much to experiences until you've actually had them.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense. Because a lot of times
The reason is I found that my anticipation of things that hasn't actually happened has always been faulty, tremendously faulty. You know, so for example, this week I was going through walkthroughs of the workshop rooms. So I went in and the team that does the complete setup for the workshop rooms. And because of the demand for people to come back to live workshops in January, several of the workshops are going to have to be at a hotel nearby. So we're using the one in the exhibition that built a new hotel over the last couple of years in the CNE exhibition. Okay. So, you know, it's going to be like 70 or 80 people. And according to the rules in Toronto now, we can't have more than 36 in our big workshop room where we can actually fit 70, you know. We can fit 70, but not under the current laws. And the same thing's true in Chicago. So we're going to be at the Sheraton, you know, going to be at next to the, somewhere, you know, close by to the office in Chicago. And so I went in and people said, so how you think it's going to go? And I said, I'll tell you after I do the first workshop.
Yeah, right.
I said, I'm keeping my anticipation sensors dialed way down. And I said, I don't want to be pre-thinking something that isn't going to happen.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying about that's like the hurricane situation. If you didn't know it was coming, you just anticipate, you see that it's getting windy. Hey, we should probably head inside here. And, you know, get to some safe ground that you don't
actually,
actual experience.
One of the pizza chains, one of the huge pizza chains, I'm trying to think, there was an article written about 3 or 4 months that they're the best indicator, and actually the Weather Service, the government weather services in the United States use this pizza place to get a handle what's going to be necessary for government emergency relief and supplies, because this pizza place has a better handle on it and they never close.
Okay, oh, this so is Waffle House is what you're, I think you're talking
Waffle
about the
House.
Waffle House. Yeah.
Waffle House. Yes.
Yeah.
Waffle House. And they're known for never closing.
Right.
Never closing. And they go 24/7 normally, and they just keep up their normal, but they switch to a completely different kind of menu when, you know, there's a hurricane, and they have they've done enormous standardization so that a person in one Waffle House can go to any other Waffle House in the United States, and there's no difference in the routines and where things are located and what the layout is and, you know, and what procedures are for bad weather, you know, bad weather times. And they were saying what a valuable service it is that this company has arranged things so that vast numbers of people who will never go to a Waffle House are actually benefiting from the intelligence service and organization that they put together.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
There's so many great metaphors there, you know, in terms of, yeah, what you were talking about, the anticipation of something is something we can extend it probably by this huge amount. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, I've been reading over the last 2 weeks a series of novels by an author by the name of Andrew Watts, W-A-T-S, and they're called The War Planners, and he's creating about 6 or 7 novels about a war that the Chinese launch on the United States. And, you know, you're going through and there's a great deal of plausibility to the plot if, in fact, that a country like China, planning this for 10 or 15 years, would be able to put things in place that a more complacent country like the United States, which is just going about its business, but it's not really thinking through what would happen if the weapons that the Chinese used are actually in their advanced stages and, you know, the strategies. And it's very plausible. But the thing that I was thinking as I was reading these novels, I'm on number 5. I'm just starting number 5. And I was saying, it's interesting how novelists in the United States, and let's say, the British, you know, the UK and other, can publish and get out into the public a very, very systematic way of thinking in the guise of a fictional story. And my sense is that would probably not be allowed in China. In other words, there's no Chinese novelist who can, you know, who can actually write a novel where China is being attacked. And I was saying that it's kind of an advantage to have novelists, even if the situation that they're dramatizing isn't really real, isn't really plausible, because those novels can be read by the military officials and the political officials. And one of the big things that I hadn't realized, there is a weapon. The Russians have them, the Chinese have them, the U.S. has them, probably the Israelis and a lot of them, that are called EMPs. Do you know what EMPs are?
I don't.
It's called electromagnetic pulses.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I've heard that. Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's like an electron bomb that goes over, goes above, and, you know, really high above, like 50,000 feet or 60,000 feet, that will just fry the electronics in an area hundreds of square miles below them. You know, to just take out major metropolitan area, and just all the normal electronics just get destroyed. Actually, they're not just set back, they're actually destroyed. And I says, well, if that exists, then we're into a completely different phase, you know, of warfare.
Yeah, and you wonder about that. Like, I often wonder, Dan, like, now this, you know, the impact of, if there was ever an interruption in the cloud, you know.
Yeah, because everything that we depend upon daily for convenience and comfort, that would be not available. So,
right.
And every time I have to tell you something really funny. I'm on my fifth one right now. During these last 10 days, I've made 5 withdrawals from my ATM just to have cash on hand.
Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. You figure like, okay, better.
My cards aren't going to be working, but I got a feeling that cash will still be, it'll still be accepted. And
be hard to cash your, hard to trade your Bitcoin without access to.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but is the internet now too big to fail in a way? Like, has it come where it's very, with satellite and with everything, is that actually a viable concern? Every time I think that thought, I think it's so widespread that between cell towers and satellite links and, you know, cable telephone, all the different ways that we reach the internet itself, that it would seem, even a viable hypothesis, or, you know, is it a scenario that could?
Yeah. My preference is not to find out.
Right, exactly. But I just wonder, it is curious. I mean, it's one of those things that would be
like. The author of the series, Andrew Watts, said that when the war broke out, China did this, you know, that the Chinese actually did this above the carrier fleets. So carrier fleets are all electronic, you know, and they have, dozen to 15 different kinds of boats, but they're all, you know, their systems are all electronic. See, the GPS, they put out the GPS because they know which satellites actually control the GPS system. And meanwhile, the Chinese had hit they had built deep tunnels in the mountains and everything else. And so they put crucial equipment and crucial weapons inside the mountains. And it's a complete, it's a novel and it's fiction. But anyway, but it's interesting because I bet these books are read at the War College. They're read, in the various military and, the National Security Agency and everything. I bet these books are read avidly, and they're used almost like textbooks, that novelists are thinking through scenarios, which military planners may have not gotten to in their thinking.
I meant to ask you, Dan, going forward now, like looking into next year, after we've been kind of uncertain for 2 years. We're still kind of uncertain going into this year now, whether it could go either way, right? We could be at the lull, or it could be a new Omicron revival where now we've got another, we got another big curve to flatten. What has changed about the way that you've done, looked at your year now? Because I know you're really, among anybody I know, you have the most sort of tightly scheduled, I don't mean that in a bad way, I mean proactively scheduled year of anybody I know, even in terms of down to podcast recording times. What's changed about your approach to your
year?
Well,
I think, of course, responding over the last 20 months, we took out a quarter. So when COVID happened at the first part of March, we just took out a quarter and moved everything forward. And so there were no delivery of workshops promised during March, April, and May of 2020. And what we did is we said, we're just shoving everybody's active year ahead by one quarter. So if you were going to renew during the next quarter, that's now postponed until the next quarter. And what we experimented with were 2-hour workshops just to maintain contact with everybody. In other words, we said we're trying out a new form, and we just experimented with 2-hour sessions, which we had never done before, and certainly not on Zoom. And so, you know, by 6 weeks of doing this, I said, well, an actual workshop is just 2.5 2-hour workshops. You know, so I know the form, I know the structure. And so we went back to full schedule of workshops, but in a Zoom format, 3 months. And then we went full, and we've been full, you know, since June of last year. We've maintained the full schedule right up until now. And we do about 500 full-day workshops every year with all the coaches, with all the different cities. And what we're doing now, right as a point, is that we're with just looking at me as the coach. And I have, in the year right now, I have 50. So I'm about a tenth of the events, and I'm probably about a seventh, or I have about one seventh of the actual clients or customers. In other words, my workshops tend to be bigger than other coaches. And so in every case with a coach that has workshops, we're putting in a backup Zoom session for people during the quarter going forward who still choose for one reason or another, or are prevented from actually doing their live workshop. So your workshop is still going to be guaranteed, but it's going to be Zoom rather than in person. And so going forward, that's our only, you know, it's basically our only, I would say, strategy.
So do you have...
But we're, I'm always a year ahead. I'm always a year ahead with everything that's scheduled. So, you know, our workshops for me are scheduled a year ahead. My podcasts, all the other podcasts are scheduled a year ahead. And all the workshops, the books and everything else is a year ahead, because the, it's predictable. These are predictable activities.
It's good to see. Do you, when you say 50 workshops, do you have 50 workshop days next year, or is that 200 workshop days?
No, 50, because it's 13 per quarter. These are the full workshops. So January, December and January, this is the quarter that I'm in right now. I have 11 10 times workshops and 2 free zone workshops. And then just multiply by 4, and that's the year.
I gotcha.
And then I have the same number of 2-hour connector calls. So it's 52 of those. So I have 104 events, but, you know, those are, I can have 2 of those on one day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Right. But anyway, and so we'll go forward. You know, we'll go forward with it. But I'm keeping my reactiveness to a very. I'm noticing I'm keeping my reactive. I'm not, you know, ready for anything that can happen. And the reason is it hasn't happened.
Right. Well, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, your Colby profile and my Colby profile are very close to each other in our general temperament, very close to each other. And it's impossible for me, and I think it's impossible for you, to do too much research before reality has happened.
Right.
So I have to go in motion first to figure out whether I'm on the right path or not. I can't think beforehand what is the right path. I said, well, I don't have any experience as actual research. And I've certainly spent years making up things that didn't happen. So I've decided not to do that.
Right. Exactly. And how many quarters
one thing,
are
you? You want a lot of cash stockpiled.
You want a lot of cash?
Stockpiled, in other words.
Oh, stockpiled.
Whatever happens, you've got the you've got the cash to deal with it. So that's
total cash confidence. That's the... says a lot. That's absolutely true. That's something.
Yeah.
You mentioned you got 30 or 40 book ideas there. How many do you have?
Well, these are the,
the situation of how you select which one. How many do you have stacked up ahead that you know?
Not more than
this is the order kind of thing.
Yeah, not more than the next one. I mean, I've got a growing list to choose from.
Yeah.
as I get through. Halfway through this quarter, I know what the name of the next one is going to be. You know,
I got
So we just came out with one that was distributed starting beginning of December called American Happiness.
Okay, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, that'll come in your package for you, for your workshop. And the next one, which approaching halfway completed in terms of cartoons and text, is called Collaboration Ground Rules. It's just kind of what I picked up about all the different examples of collaboration. And, you know, this seems to work regardless of what it's about. And so keep these things in mind. And then I'm tending towards the next book being Not Being Bothered, you know, which was a workshop exercise. And, the thing is, you're bothered. Tell me all the things you're bothered about. Oh, I'm bothered about this. I'm bothered about this. I'm bothered about this. I say, okay, choose one of them. And somebody chooses, well, I'm bothered about this. Okay. Let me just ask you a question. If you weren't bothered by this, what kind of action would you be taking? You know, to do something about the situation. Well, I would do this and this and this if I wasn't bothered. And I said, now, okay, so you've identified sort of the hows that you would be doing. Now, who would be the whos that could actually handle those hows so that all you have to do is identify the hows and the whos can take care of it. And I said, well, we'd get so-and-so involved and everything. I said, good. Now let's go back to the thing that bothered you. Having thought through what the action steps are and who's going to take the action steps, are you still bothered? And I said, no, I'm not bothered by it at all.
Yeah.
So I said, the bother isn't about the thing itself. The bother is that you feel paralyzed or you feel stuck. And, you don't see any way forward. And I think actually what bothers everybody almost about anything is that they don't see any possible effective action or decisions in a situation.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and often just even shining a light on it, you're not really concerned about it now.
But there's sort of a button that gets pushed in us when we're bothered, that somehow our natural ability to be a problem solver or a strategist gets turned off, and we feel really anxious, and we feel really bothered when that button is disabled.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. That's, and it's interesting how this whole, I mean, it's funny because this time of year now, like, you know, we're really faced with, you know, for me now, looking forward, that, you know, I had this event here, but we ended up with one announcement, 25%, a quarter of the people were dropped out from news or fear of news or some change of something like that. And I started thinking about rethinking my live event policy, you know, of doing, you know, knowing that doesn't happen in Cloudlandia, that the virtual events, you know, never happen the way that we, you never run into that issue, you know, it always, the weather's always fine in the cloud. Sorry, one second, Dan. Yeah, just right there is fine. Sorry, we're on delivery here, Dan. I'm in the courtyard. Thank you. Yeah, it was a delivery. And so the, you know, idea of having certainty with the schedule, knowing the virtual ones, I can have certainty on the schedule. Mm-hmm. And knowing that it's going to be fine, because I had an event in end of February scheduled, which is a little bit bigger event for our real estate agents, but where that would be more problematic if you had 25% of a larger group of people not able to make it. That becomes a bigger thing, you know. So I've switched that. I'm just going to do that virtual. And I kind of made this decision that we'd, you know, do the live events when we're back to everybody's on that certainty level again.
Yeah, the one thing the one thing that we're not going to do is do hybrids, where with the same event we have people in person and also people virtual. Yeah. It's 100, you know, it's 100%. And I've been in a number of events where that happened, and it's very distracting. I've noticed the person is running the event. It's very distracting for them, and it's disjointed. I've noticed that the day, it's choppy as you go through the day. And it's weird because the person who's the head person, if they're the coach or they're the, you know, the MC or they're the facilitator, you find them behaving during the day towards one of them that doesn't make sense with the other one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, it's a choice. Choose one or the other. But I'd like to get both. And I said, well, yeah, I know. You know, I'd like to be here, but I'd like to be somewhere else at the same time. I said, yeah, I thought about that in 77 years, haven't been able to pull it off.
That's funny.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I said, we have all these Willy Wonka dreams, but that's why we call them fiction.
Right, exactly.
Or fantasy. That's why we call them fantasy. Yeah. Because, they're kind of titillating, but they're not really, really possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, So, personally, I don't feel that much shortchanged virtually. And we've talked about this, and I'm not going to go into it and great detail, but it's not like people say, well, it's not like people are really there. And I said, of course it does. It feels totally like they're totally there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I said, but I do notice that when I'm in person, there are dimensions of communication that are not there when it's virtual. There's side conversations and, you know, and off, you know, focused conversations. And I said, and that's cool. You know, I don't have any problem with that. But right. I said, on the other hand, with virtual, things happen much more crisply, and there isn't these wasted, what I would say, transfer moments when you're transferring from one experience to another. It's just a click and you're back. And I really don't know that flying. I'm flying to New York and Boston for one trip and flying to Scottsdale for another one. Just huge amount of wasted time to get in there.
Surprised. Have you come on board with the jet situation? Or you haven't wrapped your mind around that yet?
No, because we've just traveled once. I mean, we have a porter who meets us at the door and handles all the baggage and everything. So, when it becomes, when it becomes a big enough thing, I'll look at it again and see if there's an advantage to it. Yeah.
Right.
But, I was the one who said a week before COVID shut down that probably we would never do virtual workshops.
Yes, exactly.
So
right, I remember that. Yeah,
that's how good my grasp of the future is.
Right, but the good news is that you have the ability to be firm in a position, and then on new information, make an adjustment.
Yeah,
and I think that's really the best place to be, is to be at least heading in a direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, and committed to it, and really, it changes the way that you think about things. You know,
mm-hmm.
Like that's the kind of thing, because there's a lot of uncertainty as I'm planning my calendar this year. As I'm looking through, do I start now, saying, "Hey, maybe I'm coming to London, or maybe I'm coming to Sydney if everything." I mean, Sydney's still on lockdown right now, and London is, they're politically, everything is up in the air, and the way they're handling all of this. So at this point in the year, even though these things would be, at least 6 months to 9 months from now, it's not probably, it's 50-50 probably whether that would be viable thing. So in my mind, am I better going in and saying, I'm not doing any international live events this year, and maybe next year,
It's kind of interesting, and I think that we've enjoyed conversing over a couple of decades simply because we have a similar approach to where we're public and where we're private, in other words, that what I've noticed, just because you have this very unusual period to bounce things off of, that I'm far more public in relationship to my work than I've ever been in my life. I mean, I'm just I'm at them all day. I mean, there's Facebook's going out, there's Twitter's going out, there's YouTube videos going out, there's podcasts going out, and then there's books and everything else. But in my private or personal life, we have a small circle that we interact with on a social basis. And, never was a socializer very much, but it's been much more clearly defined during this period. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is that it's going to stay this way after the restrictions are lifted and you more or less have the choice to go back to how you want to live your life. I thoroughly enjoy spending time by myself.
Yeah. Marcus Aurelius.
Did he say, I know Pascal, they said that the number one cause of people's problems is that they can't spend time contentedly with themselves.
Something true.
Like that,
Yeah.
It was in French anyway, so.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
There's just so much. Yeah, I just feel like, wow, this has been, it's coming up on 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, what are you finding, Dan, with the, because we're doing the summit in
February.
Palm Beach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in
Palm
February.
Beach, yeah,
how are
seasons.
You finding reaction so far?
Oh, people excited. People excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one thing you know, Florida is not going to be closed down.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. Wild West.
Yeah, well, you know, the governor just made a stand that this was going to be the position.
Yeah.
You know, and how people think about that or anything. I said, well, look, they said, well, you know, I'm not certain about this. And I said, well, all the people who are certain will be there. So I said, you know, so it's, you know, if you're not certain and your uncertainty is going to extend to while you're being there, it's probably better to be certain about not being there, you know,
I mean,
if it's going to cause an issue. And
yes.
I said, besides, if you think you're missing something, just add five more years to your lifetime extender and you won't have lost anything.
That's true. That's exactly right. It's just extended out. And what an amazing time to have that opportunity right now, too.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly health and fitness and knowing the truth about things is certainly a top of mind right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to go out. Your name is on the list. Is your name on the list of being informed about this?
About which?
No, the new program, the Lifetime Extender program.
To be informed about it? Yes.
No, but what we asked, if you want to be first to know about it, and your name is, we have a name.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. We got about 140 out of the 200. We're going to have 200. We have about 140 who've said, yeah, definitely, as soon as you're ready, we'll do. So they get the notice a week before anybody else does.
I gotcha. No, I haven't. I'm not on the list.
All right.
There we go.
Yep. Then you'll find out. But if you tell me you're on the list, then tomorrow you're on the list. But if you don't tell me you're on the list, then you're on the second list.
The second list.
Yeah. But we've already, you know, we're already establishing a really great relationship with a organization called Inside Tracker. Which I think I've explained this in the workshops, but, you know, they do a really great first 80%, 43 markers. You know, these are blood test determined markers. And the reason why they chose these 43 is that they're all improvable by change of personal lifestyle habits, you know, sleep, food, exercise, and you can improve all 43 of these. Okay. So it doesn't require special procedures or special supplements or special.
Right.
And then they just coach you on if there are other things that you want to know, then you're going to have to go deeper with other specialists. But they're just going to do a good first 80%. Yeah, and, you know, and everything related, virtually everything related to, you know, blood circulation and cholesterol and, you know, thing is on their list, and then they give you a lot of coaching. But I've been really totally impressed with their customer service and the speed of their turnaround and everything. So Babs and I did it. They come to your house, they do the blood test, local blood test service comes, they take the blood, and 5 days later we had our report.
Yeah.
And the most has been about 10 days. That other people have gone, it's about 10 days. And terrific website. They have a terrific app. And, you know,
What was the website?
Yeah, it's called insidetracker.com.
Okay.
Two words, insidetracker.com. And tell them you're with Strategic Coach, because we have a special deal with them if you're Strategic Coach. And we have a code, but I don't have the code in my head here sitting at home today. So I could, tomorrow we could send you the code if you want to just look into it. Well, you can just go. They have a really great website. So you can go to the website. Yeah, and do it. I mean, it's very informative. And they've been up for about since 08, I think. So they're about 13 years. And so they were one of the presentations that we saw on the Peter Diamandis VIP trip, Breakthrough Health. And I said, this is a good one. And if you go, they have sort of an ultimate version, which is four times a year. And they'll give you your, what's called your inner age. So it's the difference between your chronological age and your
I remember you had said your inner age was like 63 or something.
Well, this one showed me at 68. So it wasn't as good as one that I did. The last one I did was about 2 years ago. So I may have aged 5 years.
Right.
Over that time. But it's a useful thing, and if you compare it every, and then it says, well, you know, knock off some carbs, you know, get better sleep, do more exercise, and it'll be affected the next time you do it. So the thing I love about it, it's under 3,000. If you get the ultimate version, it's under 3,000 a year, U.S. And it's just a really nice outside reference point in addition to our discussions about the mindsets of life extension and the mindsets of age reversal. You know? Yeah. So just before we go, in the 10 times workshop for this quarter, I put in an exercise called What Needs Fixing?
What Needs Fixing? Yes.
Yeah. So I said, you know, if it is true, and I believe it is, that virtually anything that ails you can be improved over the next 5 years or so, and that the facilities and the resources and the new tricks are going to be available for doing that, then how would you prioritize what gets fixed first, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have my knee, which is missing cartilage, and I have reduced flexibility because in the same period when I tore my cartilage, is 45 years ago, I also broke both of my Achilles tendons. So my flexibility and it affects a lot of things, you know, it affects your desire to exercise for one thing. And anyway, so I said, I'm going after those first. And then I could get a little bit more coaching on the kind of diet that would give me more energy and everything. Mm-hmm. So I have a list of, and everybody in the room put down three things. And somebody said, you know, when I first saw this, I don't know if I have anything that needs fixing. And then I had to remind myself that I can only see in one eye.
Oh my goodness!
Hasn't been able to see in one eye for 10 years, and his knees are shot, and you know, and he's got chronic lower back pain, and he said, but he said in my mind that was just the price I was paying for being 67 years old.
Yeah,
and I said, yeah, well, that's a normal conversation that goes back 100 million years.
Right.
But I said, maybe it's possible now not to have that conversation with yourself, to have another conversation.
And yeah, isn't that funny? That's the whole, that scan. It's funny that you kind of say that. We're doing a book with Dr. Denise Warden. And yeah, we're talking about the six signals. So this is six signals your body sends when something isn't right. And that's an interesting.
I would really like to read that book.
It's a great title, isn't it? But that's the kind of thing, like what you were just saying, like looking in these categories of your sleep. And if they're broad swaths of things. How are you sleeping? Mm-hmm. How are you pooping? How are you in pain? How's your energy? Yeah. Are you, how's your stomach? your gut feeling. Look at your body. How's your inflammation? There's things that these are signals that your body's sending that are like directional flags saying, here's something that might need to be fixed. When I hear you say what needs to be fixed, that's kind of, it's that same mindset that it's like,
well, it's the same thing. A lot of people have, first of all, they're tired of other people talking about it, and so they turn off their own personal signals. And I said, you know, maybe there was a good rationale for doing that when there isn't, there wasn't any possibility that these things could be fixed. But now that they are, maybe you can now start paying closer attention. You know,
at least you can go down the path of doing it. So you'll have the book and then have a scorecard. Where
is it Denise? You know, D-E-N-I-S-E?
D-O-N. Donise. Yeah, D-O-N-E-S-E.
D-O-N-I-S-E-S-E. Okay. And then Wagner, right?
No, Warden. W-O-R-D-E-N. Donise Warden.
Okay.
Yeah.
See,
and she's in Genius Network. And you may have seen one of her 10-minute talk. But that's the fun. You know, it's a really good starting position.
Oh, sure.
Start with that. What's going on? Mm-hmm. It gives you an awareness of where you're at right now, and then prioritize what needs to actually and there's a lot of domino effect stuff. Like we're learning more and more about inflammation, and you just get rid of inflammation, so much of the other stuff falls into place.
Yeah, well,
and a lot of that all comes down to that.
I've gotten laughs for 32 years when I say, you know, how many of you, when you're fatigued, other people choose that to be the time when they get stupid?
Right. That's true. Isn't that funny? That's what they choose. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with you, but why do they always choose this moment to get really non-functional? Yeah. So anyway, it's just an interesting discussion, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and one guy, you know, we're charging $10,000 for the new program. I mean, and somebody said, well, I'm spending about $50,000 a year shortening my life. Maybe I should just take $10,000 of that and put it over on the other side.
Shortening? What do you mean? Oh, the, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, he's got bad, you know, he's doing things that are injuring, you know, it's shortening his life. So,
right.
Anyway, but
reallocation.
Definitely, I think that, you know, things are certainly possible that weren't possible 5 years ago, and that'll be even more true 5 years from now. So, you know, but only those who have a mindset for taking advantage and utilizing breakthroughs will be interested in them.
That's right.
All righty.
Okay. So
we moved through an hour. We moved through an hour very quickly. Yep.
Same time next week.
Same time next week.